Rings, Swords, and Monsters, Lecture 2, Origins of Modern Fantasy.
In this lecture, what I want to do is bring us up to modern fantasy. Now, we're going to start all the way back with Homer and the Epic of Gilgamesh, but really what we're going to do is try to figure out what it was in the 19th century that set the stage for the flowering of fantasy in the 20th century. So we're going to go and look at, very briefly, the really ancient antecedents, and then much more closely, three or four of the most important books in the 19th century that made fantasy possible, made it marketable, made it at least somewhat respectable, and made it what it is today. So it's possible, of course, if you really want to push things, to find fantastic elements all the way back at the very beginning of literature in the Epic of Gilgamesh. There's an evil, monstrous giant named Humbaba who lives in Lebanon who has to be killed at some point. And so that's a fantastic element, we would assume. In Homer, there are monsters, Cyclops, for example, Scylla and Charybdis, and there's magic, and there's the Olympian gods who are always showing up, particularly in the Iliad, where there's an Olympian god on every fighter's shoulder at one point or another. Closer to home in English, of course, we have in Beowulf, we have the monster Grendel, his mother, and the fire-breathing dragon. But in fact, I don't think it's really accurate to categorize these works as part of the fantasy genre, because at the time that they were written, they don't seem to be anything but literature. They don't seem to be sending any kind of signal to the readers like, hey, we're fantasy literature. We're different in some way. This is just what literature was. You could have monsters. You could have magic. It's only distinctive to us because we've adopted a new aesthetic since the 18th century. So instead, what we should do is look at where fantasy literature comes from more specifically in the late 18th and early 19th centuries. And it's part of the flowering of popular literature. What the Victorians did was figure out that there were markets and lots of different markets for literature. There wasn't just one kind of literature. I mean, even in Chaucer's day, there were slightly different markets in that there was a market for the Canterbury Tales and there was market for more romance and there was market for devotional literature and so forth. But when you have to copy each work by hand, the whole idea of selling things to a large audience, or more importantly, finding a small percentage of people that would still be a large number, is not possible. That's exactly what the Victorians did. They figured out that even if, let's say for the sake of argument, that fantasy is only interesting to 10% of the population, if the population is very large, and if you can sell to all that 10%, you can be very, very successful. And that's really what happened. The Victorians developed these segmented markets for children's literature, for adventure literature, for ghost stories, and all of these form these foundations of our contemporary genres. Now, going into all of Victorian genres, a little beyond the scope of this lecture,